What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Extra Serving, a podcast from Nation's Restaurant News. I am Editor-in-Chief Sam Okus, joined by my colleague, Executive Editor Alicia Kelso. Alicia, happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Although it's Monday when everybody's listening
it's
to
Monday.
This. But they're going to get Friday vibes from the two of us. I will tell you
Friday afternoon, nonetheless. We typically do this in the morning.
Right. We're doing this Friday afternoon for a number of reasons. And it's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm not sure. We're all going to find out. But I will tell you, we're a half hour late to starting this because of how much we had to air out. Some of that maybe will come up in the podcast. A lot of it probably won't. But I will tell you, some of it had to do with this week and some scuttled travel plans I had, Alicia. I'm not going to name names, but let's just say a very high-profile chef canceled on me last second for something. And it's not like it affected my entire family's spring break.
But
it's okay. We're all good, everybody. Just remember, if you book a thing, own up to it. Please, please still hold the interview because you booked it and said interviewer was flying into town to do it. But again, I'm not naming names. We don't need to throw shade here. We're all happy vibes for the most part on Extra Serving. Alicia, what was your week like this week?
I don't know because I'm leaving for spring break tomorrow. And this is my first day off this year. I've traveled, as you know, a lot this quarter, which obviously I don't mind doing. I've had some cool experiences at, you know, and Dine Brand's dual branded restaurant and Taco Bell's Live Must Live and Zaxby's. But I'm ready to go out to a beach with my family and just not do that. Just not work for a couple of days. So
you've
good
earned
luck.
It.
Good
Alicia,
luck. Have fun
I
next week.
Very mad at you if I get a text from you or a Slack from you. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's a fun text where you're drinking on the beach. That's fine with me. If you are doing work from the beach, Alicia, I will be very, very mad at you. Do not.
No. Sometimes it, you know, our news doesn't stop because we're vacationing. So
this industry,
we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it's a hard one to cover and also take vacations. And I should add, of course, as we're talking about spring break coming up, we will be in Scottsdale, Arizona for the Restaurant Leadership Conference. That's something I think we both look forward to because it is very nice for the two of us to get out of the Midwest and go to Arizona for a few days. I will say that. I will welcome the sun and the heat. But if you are looking for a great restaurant conference to go to April 13th through 16th in Scottsdale, Alicia and I will be there. We will be doing some interviews with restaurant operators. We're still setting our schedule. So if you want to come meet us and think you have a good story to share with us, please be in touch. You can find us on LinkedIn and you can find our emails very easily on the website and such. But I'm looking forward to that. It will be a good time in Arizona. Mark Wahlberg is the keynoter. That will be a very interesting session. And Alicia, tell us a little bit about who you're interviewing at RLC.
I get to interview Olympic gold medalist Gabby Thomas, and it's going to be really intimidating because I like to think that I'm an athlete.
You are a collegiate athlete, Alicia.
I was, is the operative word here. It was a really long time ago. Don't forget, I just tipped 50. So,
still more of an athlete than I am.
Well, I don't pull a calf muscle when I'm trampolining with my kids. So yes,
it doesn't take much.
But yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. You know, she just, not only is she just this world-class athlete, but she, you know, she's got her master's in like neuroscience or something from Harvard. And, you know, she just partnered with Kava for one of their major campaigns. So I think it's going to be a really fun, robust, and interesting conversation with her. I think we have a lot to learn on how to stay motivated.
Yes, absolutely. I will be then doing two sessions. I get to do a session on culture, which will be very exciting. Two of my fellow Columbusites are on that panel, Lisa Ingram of White Castle and Kevin King of Donato's. That's very exciting. Then I will be doing C-Suite in the Hot Seat as we will be talking specifically to CEOs of breakfast-oriented chains. That is very exciting. I just got back from a very important interview with a leader of a breakfast-oriented chain, but I'm going to leave it at that because you got to stay tuned for more in our May issue. Our next signature episode is dropping with, again, that's my hint, breakfast orientation of said chain. And I will leave it at that. You'll see who it is in May. Okay, Alicia, it was a quiet week. Tends to be, usually in the wake of earnings. You know, the restaurants have kind of dumped all their news out there, gotten that out of the way. Everybody takes spring break. So, you know, kind of a quieter week, but a few things of note. The first thing I want to talk to you about, is this report on brand valuations. The headline here is that for the first time in 8 years, Starbucks is not the most valuable restaurant company in the world. That title belongs to McDonald's, which I, you know, come on, like that, neither of these things surprise me, I guess, like McDonald's surpassing Starbucks. But tell us a little bit about this, because I admit I'm a little confused because of the whole what the value number means. What's the math they're doing here? Tell us more about that.
Yeah, I'm confused too with anything that has to do with math. But, you know, this report comes out every year from Brand Finance, which is the, I believe it's the world's biggest valuation consultancy. It's out of the UK. And they, you know, they have a stout methodology. So they look at brands of all sectors. They calculate the value using royalty relief approach, the calculation of brand strength, royalty range, brand-specific revenues, forecast revenues, and more. Like I said, it's math. It's deep, deep math. But yeah, to your point, it was the first time Starbucks ceded this position in 8 years. McDonald's held the number one position in 2016. So there's a little bit of jockeying going on here. I think what surprised me the most, a couple things, actually. McDonald's ranked 42nd among all of the world's 500 most valuable brands. So it's the top restaurant chain. It's 42nd, which sort of gives you an idea of, you know, some of this brand valuation, most of it in tech, obviously. McDonald's experienced a 7% increase to $40.5 billion, and that is despite this E. coli outbreak. Again, this is global. So that E. coli outbreak impacted 900 of about, 40,000 restaurants. You know, conversely, Starbucks declined 36% last year and fell to $38.8 billion. It has been number one in large part because its footprint is simply so much bigger, you know. And so what happened with Starbucks is well documented in our publication and other publications, but obviously it had a really tough year last year, four consecutive quarters of declining sales. But again, because this is a global valuation report, I think it's probably important to zoom in on China here. Starbucks has had a particular challenge in that market as it cedes some, you know, competitive market share to up and coming like Luckin, for example. There's a ton of new beverage categorical players in China. China itself is kind of having a little bit of a slowdown overall. And so, you know, like we know, company hired Brian Niccol in August to lead a turnaround, and those are early days. So who knows what this report is going to yield next year. I think there are a couple of other important takeaways from this report other than the jockeying between one and two. Earning the top 10 for the first time were both Chick-fil-A and Wendy's. They climbed 5 and 3 positions respectively to 8 and 9. Chick-fil-A is really interesting here because, as we've reported about in NRN, it has really turned its focus on international growth in markets like the UK and, you know, Ireland. I think Singapore was one of its markets that identified as imminent expansion. So that's interesting. You know, Chick-fil-A has a lot of white space overseas. It has tried to do such expansion before, and it's going to try again, and we'll see how this plays out.
Yeah, Wendy's too, recently announcing they want to open 1,000 locations in the next couple of years, and international being a big part of that. I'll tell you a few of the surprises that I took away from this list, Alicia. And again, emphasizing this is a global, taking into account a global figures here, because KFC was number 3. We've taken our shots at KFC over the last several weeks. Well, I shouldn't say we've taken our shots. There have just been shots to take, and we didn't.
They shouldn't move from my hometown then.
Yeah, that's right. What are you with? KFC number 3, and then Subway and Taco Bell. Now, Taco Bell doesn't surprise me. Subway, though, which again, very much, I think, on a more of a downward trajectory here in the U.S., just kind of shows you sort of the global status. And number 6, this will really show you how global a report it is, Tim Hortons. Tim Hortons, just to really understand how much Canada loves Tim Hortons. And so glad they already, you know, exported that to the U.S. because they won't be exporting that to the U.S. for a long, long time. Oh,
too soon.
Um, But listen, I mean, it's such an interesting perspective, especially considering, again, Tim Hortons more of a global value than a Chick-fil-A and a Wendy's. And that is really primarily just because of, for the sake of Wendy's and Chick-fil-A, just how much of a domestic focus they have had. But I do think how much this points to the opportunity globally. Now, at the end of the day, do you think this is more than bragging rights? I mean, how much do companies truly care about this number? That jockeying for position with McDonald's and Starbucks, I mean, nobody's going to lose a job over this, right?
To your point, I think it just underscores the importance as more brands expand globally. This is, we've talked about this also before, where there's not a lot of... The U.S. market is really saturated. We know this. We're seeing mass closures at legacy brands left and right. Unfortunately, brands still have a mandate to grow. And a lot of them are trying to do so by, you know, spreading their sea legs internationally. And so I think that's what is important to watch in this report. Of course, KFC is third. They just passed 30,000 restaurants in 2024. So they might be struggling a little bit domestically, but it's hard to argue that there's a bigger brand internationally than KFC with that footprint, with the brand recognition, all of it. So I think that's the bigger sort of piece of this brand valuation report, is more brands are turning toward global for growth opportunities because they kind of have to. And so what does that look like? Well, that looks like KFC surpassing 30,000. That looks like Tim Hortons. And by the way, I grew up in Bowling Green, Ohio. Tim Hortons is very popular in the North. And so, you know, they've done a really good job extending south of that border a little bit. What I think is really interesting here that I don't want to ignore and that we've talked about before is that there are more international brands that are sort of jumping here. You know, we talked about Luckin and Jollibee. Both of those grew. And there's a brand, gosh, I'm going to butcher this name. Haidilao. Have you heard of it? It's a hot pot chain.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So that was up 10%. Jollibee up 8%. And Luckin was up 17%. All three of these brands are now targeting U.S. for expansion. So while there's a lot of legacy brands looking outward for growth opportunities, there's also a lot of international brands looking, you know, to the U.S. market for growth. And I just wrote about this a couple of weeks ago, how more international brands are seeking opportunities in the U.S. So this market here is about to get crazy.
crazier, yeah. Good for us for opportunity to have options when we dine out. Bad for restaurant companies by and large, considering the competition. Okay, when we talk about growth, there are, of course, multiple ways to grow. You can grow your physical footprint and open new locations, or you can diversify your channels. Some restaurant companies are doing that by going into CPG. Dutch Bros being the most recent. Dutch Bros this week announced that they would be going into the retail space with ground coffee and K-Cups. Seems like a pretty natural jump for a coffee brand as exciting as they are. But as you've pointed out, Alicia, far from the only company recently that is going in this direction toward retail. I know you talked to Zaxby's a bit about this as well. Tell me about Zaxby's, but also just broadly the opportunity in retail right now.
Yeah, of course, restaurant brands appearing on grocery shelves is nothing new. I mean, we can point to California Pizza Kitchen and Cinnabon, White Castle, Starbucks, and Chi-Chi's has a retail presence. So it's a tale as old as time, but we have absolutely seen a staggering increase into retail, particularly since the pandemic. I think back in 2020, 2021, when we started seeing more activity here, that was very much in response to a need to diversify revenue channels. And it was easy because finding the viscosity of the sauce and, you know, finding the right manufacturer, certainly that stuff is not easy, but it's a logical brand extension and revenue addition, you know, for brands that were at that time, especially struggling. We've continued to see more activity. As you mentioned, Zaxby's, Hooters just got involved in retail late last year. And then, of course, this week, Dutch Bros announced their intention to enter the retail space in 2026. So in addition to that diversified revenue stream, there's also that increased brand awareness, which is very, very important, especially for a brand, for example, like Zaxby's. And yes, I did talk to the chief marketing officer at Zaxby's, Patrick Schwing, and asked him why retail was a priority for them and continues to be. And he basically said, you know, we want to show up and be a bigger part of people's lives. And retail for us is, quote, a brand building exercise. So, you know, there's less than 1,000 Zaxby's at this point in time, but they have over 1,000 Walmart appearance. So, you know, it just proliferates in a different way to a different audience.
Yeah.
I will say, if I can add one quick thing, there was new research that came out this week from Technomic Ignite that showed that snacking consumers are now migrating more toward CPG retail for snacks to satisfy their cravings, basically. Since 2021, packaged snack purchases from retailers rose by 5%, while purchases from restaurants fell 3%. So there could be something else at play here. Restaurants are seeding snack consumers to grocery as grocery prices remain, you know, less inflationary than menu prices. And this could be part of that too. So we've got diversified revenue stream, we've got brand extension and brand increased brand awareness, and now we might just be fortressing.
Yeah, it's a great point. I actually had this conversation recently with an investor in the space, and you know, he was making the point of the flywheel spinning, right? Which is when you have these types of channels, or you diversify your channels in this way. And to your point, Alicia, really just getting in front of the customers in different places, you keep that flywheel spinning because you're ensuring that you're building that loyal customer who has multiple access points. And you know, one of the examples we were talking about was Jenny's. Jenny's, of course, near and dear to me here in Columbus, but such a great example of a brand that has scoop shops, it has e-commerce, and then it also is in retail and at the CPG in the frozen aisle. So that is, you know, they have three very specific channels in which they show up in front of the customer, meaning that as a Jenny's, you know, as a fan of Jenny's, you don't have to choose between Ben and Jerry's and Jenny's in the retail aisle. You can still get your Jenny's there and get them at the scoop shop and then send some to your family member on their e-commerce store. So, and the point is that, again, that kind of keeps the flywheel spinning and really kind of doubles down on that brand equity with your fans. Now, one thing I wonder is how much this is also being affected by inflation, by restaurants seeing the customer pull back on their restaurant spend. Because if the customer pulls back on their restaurant spend, that means they're putting more into their supermarket spend. Customers are still eating three meals a day for the most part, right? They have to eat. So just because they're spending less at restaurants doesn't mean they're spending less on food, period. And so if I'm spending less at restaurants, but then I'm walking through the grocery aisle a little bit more intentionally, a little bit more looking at price tags and trying to find value, and oh my gosh, Zaxby's. Well, I used to go to Zaxby's all the time before I pulled back on my restaurant spend, but here they are in the grocery store. This is great. So I just have to wonder if, you know, there's going to be probably some market share shifts between restaurants and supermarkets. Supermarkets will probably pick up more share. And as that happens, it would behoove the restaurant brands to be there. Do you buy that as a?
I do. I absolutely buy. I think March was the 23rd month in which restaurant inflation outpaced grocery. So obviously, and we've done countless reports on the retrenchment of low income, especially consumers pulling away from restaurants. Traffic is still a nightmare. We talked about consumer sentiment last week. I don't want to talk about it anymore because I'm in a good mood. That's a terrific point. And it also goes to that earlier point that you made of the importance of brands that are able to be everywhere, to be everywhere. It also goes to the point of, you know, these companies like Taco Bell and Wendy's and McDonald's pushing a stronger focus on snacks. You know, McDonald's just created an entire team dedicated to beverages and snacks because, again, they're seeding customers to the grocery store. And I just think it's kind of, if you can't beat them, join them kind of thing. And then, you know, and still do your own thing. And maybe you can, again, put a fortress around it.
Yeah. Well, I've yet to see the CPG world reverse and go into the restaurant space. Well, I take it back. Kellogg did open a restaurant once, right?
Yeah, Cheez-Its has a lot of restaurant stuff. Kellanova has a pretty big presence.
Right. Maybe we'll see one more of
that. Yeah, maybe.
Trend in that direction.
There was like a Cheez-It Pop-It somewhere. I don't remember.
Well, anyway, let's move along. Okay, we've got to touch on, before we get into the extra serving, we've got to touch on some downer of news, which is Bar Louie just filed for Chapter 11 protection. And also, as you pointed out, Alicia, Hooters, I believe, is being sued for payment, not paying on a sponsorship deal in NASCAR. And what does this mean for the state of casual dining? Because I don't think any of us were so surprised when we saw that Bar Louie had filed for bankruptcy, because it had reportedly closed a bunch of locations. I believe it ended up maxing out a few years ago at like 130 locations. They're down to like 48 now. So not so surprising that that would happen, but we continue to have, I don't know, there's maybe sort of a barbell going on with some, you know, you have some good full service news out of a brand like maybe a Texas Roadhouse or of course Chili's. But then you have over here, Bar Louie's not doing so great. Hooters has not been doing good for a while. What do we make of this, what it says about the full service dining?
I think Texas Roadhouse and, you know, Chili's are complete anomalies right now. I think casual dining and sit-down dining in general is struggling. And there's several reasons for this. I don't think I was surprised about Bar Louie. I love Bar Louie. There was a Bar Louie down the street from me when I lived in Columbus. Yeah. And we went all the time. And I was like, ooh, gastropub, cool.
I'm fairly certain I ended up at that Bar Louie for my 21st birthday.
Arena District. Yeah. We were probably there at the same time, just didn't know. Because I'm that much older than you.
I stumble over to you. Hey, you know someday.
But, you know, and let me just clarify, Hooters settled their lawsuit this week. They were sued last July or August. They had that NASCAR relationship since 2017. And we saw mass closures at Hooters last year. There have been rumors that we have not reported on because we try not to report on rumors. But there's speculation that Hooters, their bankruptcy is imminent. They have like over $300 million in debt that we do know. So just a struggle across the board as it pertains to casual dining. We talk about Bar Louie, Hooters. Of course, Bar Louie's bankruptcy follows On the Border, Mexican Grill and Cantina, which filed earlier this week. And then, of course, the bloodbath of 2024, which had marquee brands like Red Lobster, TGI Fridays, Rubio's, Buco di Beppo, World of Beer Bar and Kitchen. I think a confluence of issues of many of these companies just simply took on too much debt to get through challenge A, B, C, D, E, all the way through Z that have presented themselves since the, you know, 5 years ago. And, you know, others haven't stayed current with changing consumer preferences. There's also, you know, the bottom falling out with traffic. We talked about intensifying competition. So that share of stomach right now is awfully challenging. Mostly the whole, you know, traffic erosion. Consumers don't have as much, disposable income to spend on restaurants. And so you better do something to make it worth their while. So just inflation. I can't forget that. Wages. I mean, yeah. A laundry list.
I don't envy, obviously, the full service restaurant today because, I mean, all of the challenges as you've outlined. But then there's also the fact that, like, to really win over the customer today, you have to kind of ace two particular, you fill two buckets, which is experience and value. And experience, especially for the full service restaurant, right? Experience is what they expect. And that's why they've gone to your restaurant for that full service experience. Otherwise, they would have gone to fast casual. But value is still in the back of their mind. So they're still looking for a good deal at that restaurant that they're going to go sit down at. And still expecting that experience. And to some degree, that's sort of rock and a hard place, I think, for the full service restaurant. So again, Chili's has done this amazing job of winning over the customer with value. And they have these, you know, great deals that they're offering, and they're winning social media and getting in front of the younger customer, especially. then you have Texas Roadhouse over here, which really wins, yes, on value, but also really experience. People love that great experience of the Texas Roadhouse. But I think like with a Bar Louie in particular, I'm sure they struggled to really satisfy the value part of that. If you don't have a great value proposition, you know, if you have a fine menu and you, you know, have a fine experience, but in this day and age, you can't really provide that good value proposition, you're in trouble. And conversely, like Hooters, they offer a pretty good value proposition, but I think Hooters kind of struggles in the experience department, which is A, they're kind of a specific kind of brand where I'm, you know, I've not been in a Hooters, partly for reasons associated with shame. I don't know if I should say that aloud, but it's like, am I going to go to a Hooters? Really? No disrespect. But of course, I will go to Twin Peaks, as you and I have gone to Twin Peaks together. But like, you know, I don't think the experience is necessarily there, especially for the mainstream customer. So anyway, fast casual, this is where fast casual continues to, you know, sort of swoop in and steal market share, because it's like, hey, they're going to win on experience and on value. So I, you know, to your point about last year being a bloodbath, I mean, this year I think could continue to be that, because you're right. Too many of these chains took on too much debt and the customer is not anywhere close to storming back to full service restaurants and spending more of their money.
Yeah. And there have been predictions about how this year will probably be worse in terms of, insolvent restaurant companies. And so, you know, we certainly hope that's not going to be the case. But you know, I guess we'll see. But this is just as tough an environment as I think you and I have both seen in the 15 plus years that we've been covering this industry. It just seems like operators cannot catch a break. They, you know, they emerge from the COVID, you know, regulations to get smacked with a labor shortage. They get through the labor shortage to get smacked with generationally high inflation and so on and so forth. And now we're in this consumer sentiment environment that just is, it's a hard pill to swallow right now.
It is indeed. And I'm not sure we're going to get too much more optimistic with our next subject. It's time to move on to our extra serving portion of the event. At least we're optimistic with who we're bringing on to talk about it. And that would be senior editor Joanna Fantozzi. Joanna, welcome to Extra Serving.
Hello. I don't want to be negative. So I'm going to be as neutral as possible because I have neutral observations.
Excellent. And, you know, you're a journalist, so technically that's your mandate. But, we appreciate that you can do it even more so today. All right, Joanna, we're going to talk about Panera. So Panera officially made Paul Carbone their full-time CEO. He was interim CEO. I believe he was CFO before he was interim CEO. Am I right about that? Was he CFO?
No, COO.
COO. Okay. So then he became interim CEO. Now he's permanent CEO. It gives us an opportunity to talk about Panera a little bit more broadly. Joanna, this is your beat. You follow them pretty closely. What would you say is sort of the state of Panera Bread today and what Paul Carbone will be leading on a permanent basis now?
Also, let me just fact check myself. I'm sorry. That is CFO.
Okay,
there's been a few CEO announcements, and I feel like sometimes it gets confusing. But anyway, yes, I actually have some more thoughts. Yes, I have thoughts on Paul Carbone, but also on kind of Panera continuing to, I guess, be on the path that it's been on over the past year publicly and probably a lot longer than that behind the scenes. Because we also, alongside the announcement of the new CEO announcement, also have the news that over the past couple of months, more fresh dough facilities have closed. So that's four more. So really, I think what Panera and what Carbone really probably want to do is they want to increase profitability and improve product consistency. And that's kind of why they seem to be phasing out that fresh dough facility model. I feel like over the past year or two, there's been this kind of slow drip of news from Panera with the FDFs closing, the menu transformation, rolling back some of their policies, their sourcing policies. Some of this has not been particularly popular. But then at the same time, we don't really have any idea what's going on with the IPO. And so that's kind of a big question mark there. And so maybe with Paul Carbone being named permanent CEO, we'll see kind of more momentum with that. Something I did want to note is that he did say, we are, quote, we are on the right path to return Panera back to its rightful position as the industry leader in fast casual. Not sure exactly what that means, but yeah, my interpretation with that is, I mean, I don't know if I'm reading too much into this, but it seems like he kind of wants to obviously return them to a path of profitability, and they almost maybe want to be kind of more of a general fast casual leader, and they don't really see a path through their kind of old branding of the super clean ingredients, fresh baked bread, and more of that cafe bread forward feel. So yes, I think that they're in a period of transition and TBD on where it goes.
Yeah, it's interesting because to that quote, until a couple of years ago, Panera was the number one fast casual until Chipotle passed them a few years ago, right? Like they were the standard in fast casual alongside Chipotle, of course, and still to some degree, they're the standard bearer. And you guys probably have the same experience when you're trying to explain what is a fast casual to somebody. I always say it's like Chipotle or Panera, because those are two very easy touch points for most people in this country to understand. But what's so fascinating to me, and I don't know if you guys have talked to any friends about Panera or where your personal stance on Panera is, but I know a lot of people who have stopped going to Panera because of the quality downturn. And it's so fascinating to me because what put Panera on the map in the first place, what made them the biggest fast casual, was quality. And the fresh baked bread was like a part of their promise. I will never forget when they first opened. They opened in the vicinity of my hometown. They opened 45 minutes away in a town called Parkersburg, West Virginia. Alicia, I'm sure you know Parkersburg. And I swear to you, there were a number of occasions that my mother drove there to buy their bread. And it's just, it blows my mind to think about now. I don't think many people would do something like that, not only because there's a lot more options, but because I don't think Panera's really, they're not known for their bread anymore. So I'm fascinated to see this because increase the profitability, great. You know, probably could increase the consistency and you can increase convenience and speed of service. You can increase all of those things by cutting some of these corners that they've done. But you've also totally pulled up your roots. And I don't know, Joanna, do you think Panera customers at this point care anymore about that?
I think that's a great summary of it. I think that a lot of the original, maybe Panera diehards or customers have probably drifted away from the business. I think that for me personally, I used to go there a lot when I was in high school in the mid 2000s. But I think that they've, again, I am reading between the lines. I'm kind of interpreting something that's not been fully stated by them. But I think that they want to go after kind of more of the general customer that's just looking for a sandwich and isn't just saying like, oh, I really love their bread bowls or I'm obsessed with their fresh pastries and whatnot. They just want someone that they want that customer that is really going for that convenience factor. And so it feels like they're just kind of aiming to be a different brand than their roots were. And that is definitely going through some growing pains and it alienates some people for sure.
They must have data that suggests this is the right direction to go. Cause I don't know. I think my gut instinct tells me most brand turnarounds, most sort of, you know, stories of brands that are on an upward trajectory, you tend to see it's because they've doubled down on their roots. It's because they've tapped into something that it's like, this is more authentic to who we are. Not the opposite, but you know, data may suggest otherwise. Alicia, what do you make of Panera Bread today?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a couple things. Because I used to be a huge Panera junkie. And I think Panera got carried away with pricing. Especially back around the leading into and right after the pandemic, when they launched their chicken sandwich, I distinctly remember being on the phone with an executive and asking for the price point. And he told me it was like $12. And I had to ask him to repeat it three times because it was so shocking to me. And this was 4 or 5 years ago. This was before, you know, the you know what hit the fan on inflation, where everybody was launching chicken sandwiches for about $6 to $7. And so I think that was a sort of a microcosm of a greater picture there, where we used to go to Panera all the time. My kid loves it, you know, but we were always shocked at how much money we were spending. And to your point, Sam and Joanna, the quality was dissipating. they were compromising their quality, but I was still paying the same price, if not more. And so we, I think, are in, and I also think Panera sort of lost its way with marketing a little bit. Just don't hear about them anymore. Kind of like what Starbucks went through, you know, prior to Brian Nickel coming on board and saying, look, we need to start marketing again. I think Panera has sort of lost its messaging, at least publicly. I don't hear about them anymore. They're not top of mind anymore. And maybe it's because they're trying to figure this out and they're throwing a lot of spaghetti against a wall from where I'm sitting to understand what they are trying to figure out. I hope they figure it out soon. I think it's an incredible brand. But when you have, this is a good case to when you study of when you have the necessity, the mandate to bolster unit economics, how much do you compromise, Sam, to your point, the core of the brand? They've got Greg Flynn coming along and saying that par baked is good. Operationally, consistent, it's easier for team members, it's consistent. You know, when you have the world's biggest franchisee supporting an initiative, you're going to want to lean into that. And I'm not going to argue with Greg Flynn. He knows how to run restaurants.
Smart guy.
But, you know, again, did the price equation get too high for that compromise specifically? Customers aren't that forgiving.
Right.
So I don't know.
Yeah. Another interesting point on brand compromise is also that the menu itself, which some of the new menu items have ingredients in them that I feel like Panera of like 15 years ago would never have, which is just like double bacon and like ranch dress. I don't know. It feels very, very much more indulgent than I feel like Panera kind of had this like health sheen to it, kind of almost like Chipotle back in the day as well. Actually, it's an interesting comparison to Chipotle.
Felt like you were coming after ranch for a second.
I liked how you did it like a WWE announcement.
Oh my gosh. This
double
is
bacon.
Ranch.
You come for ranch. You better know what you're doing when you come for ranch in front of me. Okay, well, it's Friday. I don't want to keep you guys too long. Once again, Senior Editor Joanna Fantozzi, Executive Editor Alicia Kelso, thanks for joining me on Extra Serving.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.